Ezekiel Elliott, and he's got an opening. Elliott, off to the races. Can they catch him? No, they can't. Touchdown.
Tie a three, a win. It's Sylvester for three. Oh! Oh! With 5.1 to go.
Here's Fields with time in the end zone.
A single season record of 14 set by Vernon Golston in 2000.
8 seconds to go. Kraft with Paolo defending. Now a switch off. He's got Niang on him with three. He better hurry. Puts up the shot. And he hits it with 0.2 seconds to go. Wow.
Inbounds Turner, left side of the backboard. Turner across the timeline, throws it from high on the right.
He hit it, Evan Turner! He hit it just inside of half court!
They go for the ball game! Touchdown! Michael Jenkins on 4th and 1! Would you believe it? Craig Krenzel strikes with 1.5 minutes left! Holy Buckeye!
This is the Bunch of Nuts podcast featuring Dan Smith and Big Cass. Let's get nutty!
Hello and welcome back to a big time episode of the Bunch of Nuts podcast. I'm Dan here with Big Cass. And today we have the man, the myth, the legend himself, Chugs. Welcome to the show. It is a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me on, fellas.
Hey, well, welcome. We get some recruiting insight with Chugs. Usually I do some of the recruiting for this show, but this guy knows more of the inside than I do.
Yeah, so, like, Chugs, obviously, he's kind of burst onto the scene recently. But, I mean, really, Chugs, what made you want to get into the recruiting game of late?
Variety of reasons. Again, obviously, a few connections have come up during the past little bit that allowed me to. Not to say that I haven't wanted to be in that area, I guess. But, no, I had a few people come on to me saying, obviously, I did have the connections that I have. You know, I played a bit of college ball myself, so I got that sense, obviously, in the recruiting knowledge. But having, obviously, the connections to tell me what's going on the inside allowed me to be able to expand my recruiting a little bit more and then share the wealth a little bit with the Twitter world.
Where did you play your college ball?
I like to keep that one under wraps.
All right.
Yeah, that one's going to stay a little quiet along with the name as well on that. But I'll give you a little background with Chugs if you are wondering.
Absolutely.
I think you might have actually asked me if it had anything to do with our man chugging off last year.
Yeah, well, I was wondering what's behind the name Chugs. I was like, relation to Chugs chugging off the number four?
So, It's a little bit of an inside joke with my pops there. He, you know, we'd always joke, throw Chuggy in, you know, like there's a little bit of time left. Fields has obviously had his heydays. And, you know, if Chuggy got to go in, as we do, whoever obviously said, you know, he's going in today or he wouldn't, other guy's going to have to chug their drink. So that's what Chugs came about. So I ended up obviously saying, no, he's not going to go in. You know, Day's going to leave Fields out the whole time. And then, of course, Chugs comes from that.
Yeah. The only time I really got in a chugging contest was when Ohio State played Texas in 06. My cousin, think about it, we're both 18 years old. And, yeah. You know, my mom's boyfriend was at the time in his early 30s.
Yeah.
So just think about this. My cousin's like, hey, let's do every turnover, every punt, and every kickoff. Needless to say, I haven't chugged a beer since, and I'm 32, so that's been a long time.
Yeah, just a little bit.
What's your favorite method of chugging beer? Shotgun, funnel, just straight out of the glass?
Yeah, I'll take a shotgun before a funnel, but don't count me out for a funnel, that's for sure.
I'm a funnel guy. Back in the day. Okay. I always bought a funnel to start every year off campus, and it was always fun until like end of football season, and then that thing would get a little nasty, and then we'd have to probably throw it out
every Saturday in the shoe, right?
Exactly.
So, speaking of Justin Fields and Chris Chuganoff, Chuganoff obviously is not there this year. We have Jack Miller and C.J. Stroud. Let's go beyond that. Fields, we know, first-round draft pick, possibly a Heisman Trophy winner. My pick to win the Heisman Trophy, and I'm sure both of your guys'. Let's talk about Kyle McCord. Can he compete with Jack Miller and C.J. Stroud for the quarterback job and maybe start as a true freshman?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough one to say, right? He's gonna get a little bit of an upper hand compared to the other two guys, right? Like, he'll be able to enroll early, where obviously they were as well. But he's gonna get some time in that class before either of them actually get to step in a game, arguably. Again, I kind of like Stroud, though. Again, the kid is obviously an elite passer. A little bit more to the field side of the game. When you're actually talking X's and O's, who do you want in a Ryan Day offense? Miller's a good passer. Jack Miller's a good passer, but at the end of the day, if you're going to be playing those deep balls, you're going to be playing those underneath routes, you're probably going to have Stroud. I just don't see them giving McCord that early jump, especially with bringing in Miller and Stroud so early, obviously, right? They're only one class away from each other, and with Baldwin being gone, obviously, and not much behind Fields, there's a I just don't see McCord making the jump.
Who wins the backup job this year?
Stroud, 100%.
That's what I've been hearing. That's what me and Cass have been hearing when we went to the rally a month ago, you know, at the Shoe. A lot of people were just raving about Stroud. I heard just from a bunch of fans that apparently he looks legit. He looks like, you know, a potential Heisman candidate down the road.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you guys have seen, obviously we've all seen G. Scott, right? Absolute man.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Well, I don't know if you guys have seen C.J. Stroud lately. You look at the body comparison. You look at how game-ready he is compared to the guys like Jack Miller and Kyle McCord. You got to remember, McCord's still got that young teenage body, right? Like, Stroud's built himself into that man frame and arguably, obviously, looks more college-ready than the other two. Not to say that Miller isn't college-ready. He might just, again, when you're thrown into those games, you're going to have to adapt on the fly. I don't see Miller having as easy as a transition as Stroud will.
I can definitely see that. I think Miller, I just don't see how he really fits in at times. I think he's maybe more better under, he'd be a better player maybe under Urban, perhaps.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of like a Tebow a little bit. Just he's a big guy like that.
Yeah,
I mean, he potentially. I mean, I doubt it, but he's a cat guy who I wouldn't be shocked if he maybe switches positions down the road if he doesn't win.
It's tough competition. Yeah, go ahead.
One of those guys is transferring, regardless. I think, hear me out. And a lot of people, you know, I've said this earlier. I haven't said this on the show yet, but Stroud or Miller, whoever wins that job next year, one of them is transferring,
right.
And I believe. Yeah. Oklahoma is a good spot for either of them because think about it. Spencer Rattler is going to be gone after next year. So, yeah. I mean, that's just my open opinion.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's no secret. Me personally, I've been very vocal on Twitter, obviously. Stroud's the guy in line. I've heard from countless sources. Stroud is the guy who's next in line. Miller, though, not to knock anything against him, right? He was a high recruit out of Arizona. Arizona obviously produces quarterbacks like Rattler. A lot of good talent there. But with Miller as well, the biggest thing is Ohio State, outside of maybe Dwayne Haskins, unless you have that arm ability like Haskins to actually sling it in there, maybe Cardale Jones, you have to be a mobile runner. And even Cardale was mobile, right? Miller, if you actually watch, he's mobile to an extent, but he's not Ohio State mobile. So, again, I do agree with you. He's a guy to transfer out. But with saying that, maybe on the Oklahoma end, like, I'd be saying more of a school like Oklahoma State, maybe a Mississippi State in an air raid offense. He came from an air raid offense in high school. So, again, I could see him hopping into something like that. Mike Leach's offense and Mississippi State is built for that. And to be quite honest, they don't have any passers in Mississippi State like the talent Jack Miller has. So I could see an SEC school picking him up, especially being a Southern guy, right?
Yeah. Just imagine we're seeing Jack Miller throwing to Kevin Warren's son in like a year or two. That would be.
I mean, if I was a recruit, and this is my personal opinion, and the only two coaches I would love to go play, if I was a quarterback, that I would go play and learn under is Lincoln Riley and Ryan Day, hands down. There's no two better coaches out there producing quarterbacks.
For sure.
So Chugs, you're obviously, you know, a recruiting insider. What are you hearing about some potential commits, specifically JT and Emeka? I'm not even going to try to pronounce their last names because I will absolutely butcher them, but hopefully everyone listening understands the two defensive line players I'm talking about.
Yep. Yeah. So Emeka Egbuka and JT Tuimoloau. JTT, actually – on Emeka's side, obviously, I'm not sure if you guys saw it today. I dropped a little bit on Emeka. I'm hearing that he's actually moving up his commitment date. You're going to be looking more towards October, obviously, with this January dead period we're going to be looking at. You know, it's obviously reestablished a couple decisions for these highly touted recruits. Obviously, both blue chips, both guys looking at Ohio State out of the state of Washington. I definitely expect, again, I'm hearing the 17th, the 18th weekend of October for Emeka Egbuka. He's going to be a Buckeye come that weekend when he does make his decision. Again, you'll hear a little bit of noise coming out of the Huskies' background of recruiting, but to be quite honest, this is a two-team race, and it's between Ohio State and Oklahoma. And I don't know if you guys are too up to date on those Oklahoma boards, but a lot of the insiders with Oklahoma are saying his dad basically told them that Oklahoma academics are not where Ohio State's are. That's going to push Egbuka away from it. Again, his dad wants him to be at a fairly good academic school with also that NFL capabilities. At the end of the day, that's going to push Egbuka towards Ohio State over Oklahoma. And obviously, Washington isn't even in the book right now. So we can just cancel them out right there. JTT, dark horse with that one is Oregon. Not a lot of talk about Oregon. Obviously, being that West Coast team, they get a little more exposure out there. They've had guys like Kayvon Thibodeau that have really shown out. They're trying to build themselves as kind of that next big NFL D-line factory, not to the extent of Larry Johnson and class, obviously, at Ohio State. But again, they're trying to market it that they're the next thing up. Obviously, they're always going to be bringing the swagger. They're going to be bringing everything Oregon always pitches to the recruits. I just don't see this one falling out of Ohio State's hands, to be quite honest. Day's done a great job. Tuimoloau's parents have both said the biggest thing is development. Where else are you going to go if you're the best D lineman in the country? You're going to go to Ohio State. You're going to go to Larry Johnson. The stats speak for themselves. So I do expect both the blue chips to end up in Day's class at the end of this.
Can you imagine because right now I'm looking at the crystal ball. It's both Emeka and this according to Bucknuts 247 Sports, which to me personally is the most reliable recruiting.
Yep.
Emeka is at 88.9% to commit to Ohio State, which just changed like yesterday because I checked this. It was at 86. JTT is at a 92.3. And I'm looking at this. Can you imagine?
7.7.
Yeah. Can you imagine Jack Sawyer and JTT? They could be better than Bosa and what Bosa and Chase Young could have been.
Well, and that's the comparison, right? You see what the two guys did together, obviously coming from different classes, right? But you see the capabilities there, right? And so you got to imagine Day and staff, obviously, with Coach LJ, you know, they're telling them, listen, we've done it already. We've seen what you guys have to operate with. Again, Jack Sawyer is – it's crazy to think that we could land both because right now he's the secondary guy if you land JTT. And in any other class, he's the number one player in their class, right? So, again, it's really wild to think that Ohio State could land both these guys. I'm really big on, obviously, Jack Sawyer, but just the dynamic of the two and seeing where they could be in as early as 2 years from now, you'd expect both guys to be leaving after their junior year.
Absolutely. It's insane. Like to think about, and you know, with that. And I have to give credit to Cam Hayward for starting all this, because looking back, Cam Hayward's the one that started all the D line, in my opinion, in the last 10 years, because you've had, especially on the end spot, you had Cam Hayward, John Simon, Bosa, Young, and then Sawyer.
Hubbard.
I mean, it just list goes on and on.
Yeah, and then we got Zach Harrison this year. You can expect he's going to be a top two-round pick. I fully expect if he breaks out like he can, he will be where we expect him to be and amongst those top 15.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, D-line, I think the future of the D-line is in great hands. Speaking of, I guess, another defensive lineman, a recent decommitment, which is kind of odd to see out of Ohio State, Tunmisi Adale, and I probably butchered that name again, but what are you hearing on why he decommitted? Because was it because the Big Ten postponed the season, or was it other reasons?
I'm going to be quite honest with you. Again, if you've seen Twitter with Tunmisi, he's a big guy who would talk a lot you know, guys wanting to use Ohio State for clout, using Ohio State to gain following, build traction, you know, maybe try and get yourself more in those 4 to 5 star books just by, you know, pondering the eye of the, you know, the Twitter world, right? I believe that one was more a popularity thing with Tunmisi. You know, his best friend's Kamar Wilcoxon, Florida commit. Again, Wilcoxon has been – he was recruited by the Buckeyes. The Buckeyes turned him down. At that time, again, we had riches in our 2021 class right now at the cornerback position. Wilcoxon just wasn't going to fit. They talked about maybe throwing him in as a possible safety. You know, at the end of the day, he feels he's a corner. He wasn't going to fit the system. With that being said, that's where the negative recruiting starts to come. Once obviously you turn away someone's best friend. I believe that Tunmisi was going to, you know, ride the wave as much as he could with Ohio State. But at the end of the day, you know, if your family, your friends are, you're telling you, oh no, don't go to Ohio State, you know, schools like Florida, Texas A&M, who's really big in the recruitment for Tunmisi. Again, these are schools with big fan bases. They're schools where he really does love the recruiting process. So speaking of Tunmisi, you know, I believe that at the end of the day, he's going to end up at Alabama. Alabama is right now in it with Texas A&M and Florida. I don't see the Tide losing this one. They don't have a ton of depth in regards to their edge rushing. But yeah, to answer your question, I think he was using Ohio State more as just a fun wave to ride during the time, but it wasn't something that was really ever going to stick.
I could totally see that too, just because it was it almost appears from like from the way I saw it play out, because we all saw that those tweets about him, you know, using Ohio State for clout.
Right.
The second the Big Ten made their decision, he decommitted. No one else did that. It's clear that I think when you do something like that, you truly weren't in it for the long run. You were just using that as an excuse to jump ship.
Yeah. And again, I think that the writing was on the wall. It's always nice when something comes up as a smokescreen that you can use. I think that was a smokescreen to say, hey, now's the perfect time to jump out.
Who are some guys that you could see possibly flip to the Buckeyes that, you know, that are out there? You know, I mean, I'm looking down the list and there ain't many because this class is so good.
Yeah, definitely. I don't see too many flipping. I have heard a little bit about the Ohio native Marcus Allen, obviously a deco from Michigan. Not to say that Ohio State played a role in that deco, but I'm definitely hearing a little bit of chatter on Marcus Allen, possibly just adding one more receiver to the class. Again, Ohio State's not going to turn away high 3-star, low 4-star receivers that want to be a part of the class if obviously we see the right things. Again, at the end of the day, Hartline is going to expand these guys' roles. He's going to actually develop them into the receivers that we obviously need in zone 6. And we have, again, we have a wealth of talent, but to say Marcus Allen couldn't fit in, he's a big body. Almost, if you've watched his tape, he's very Ben Victor-like. And again,
oh,
Ben
yeah. Victor,
We all know he's an Ohio State legend, master of the jump ball, master of the big plays. I really like the comparison there with Marcus Allen and Ben Victor.
That just has me sold on him. Ben Victor, yeah. if you've never heard, he's my favorite Buckeye ever. I have a custom made Ben Victor jersey. If we can get Ben Victor 2.0, I'm all on that. Sorry, I cut you off, Cass.
The talent that Victor had, I just wish that he could have exploded. I really do, because out of the guys, the past two seasons, out of the six guys that we lost, yeah, I thought he had the most NFL upside just because of his size. He reminded me of AJ Green the most.
And I agree with you on that. You know, you look at, I don't know how much you guys saw of what he was doing in camp with the Giants. He was a human highlight reel, but at the end of the day, you got guys who are obviously free agents that sign on right out of college, and then you got guys who are drafted. You know, the loyalty's there to invest in guys who are drafted. And to be quite honest, the Giants don't have a great receiving core.
I was shocked that him and Austin Mack didn't make the team. Like, I was that shocked.
For me, you know, the shock is Victor. A lot of people, obviously, Mac was highly touted out of high school. He had a great first few years with the Buckeyes. I'm not shocked to see that he's not on an NFL roster. I'm not shocked to see that he wasn't drafted. Not to say anything against Austin Mac. He had big play capability, but at the end of the day, Mac is very injury prone, and he has a lot of tendencies to make simple miss simple catches. Sorry, where Victor, you know, if you're throwing him anything under 15 yards, numbers, he's catching it, right? Mm-hmm. So again, that one's a little more surprising, and obviously the speed and the breakaway ability with Victor's obviously where I separate the two.
Just the size too. I mean, right now he's still on the Giants practice squad, but yep, when you look at him in the Giants playing on the Giants practice squad, I look and I'm like, that's Plaxico Burress 2.0 right there. that's a second coming. So. Yes. It baffles
I hope
me that
not,
he didn't make
I hope
roster.
He doesn't go to jail and shoots himself in the leg.
Hopefully not. So, Chugs, as we kind of look forward to, I guess, a preview of the season,
yeah,
who are some, you know, current freshmen from this recruiting class that you see making the biggest impact?
Yeah, well, I mean, the common one that a lot of people jump on is Julian Fleming. I highly expect him to be used a lot. Again, Jackson Smith Njigba obviously gets a lot of attention. Me personally, I think he is the most talented player in our class in regards to the true freshman. The kid is – obviously he comes from a spread offense. He's electric. He's been in big play situations down in Texas, right? Again, I think he had four touchdowns for over 250 yards receiving in the state championship, right? Like he's been in that spotlight. For him to show up in, you know, Indianapolis come the Big Ten championship time, it's not going to – I wouldn't be surprised to see him have a breakout year like Garrett Wilson, much did obviously last year.
Should we be concerned that Julian Fleming hasn't lost his black stripe yet, or is that just premature at this point?
No, I wouldn't be too worried. I do expect him, though, to be among the next one or two to lose it. Only reason I say that is, again, Ohio State's offense is a lot more complex than what you're seeing in regular high schools. Again, Julian Fleming came out of Pennsylvania, not to knock the state of Pennsylvania's football compared to the state of Texas, but there's really no comparison.
Yeah.
Njigba's had a lot higher-end talented coverage to play against. He's probably, again, we aren't there for any of the practices. We aren't there to see everything that's going on right now on the practice field. But you got to imagine JSN's making those plays that, you know, Julian's got to adapt to. He's got to get used to. He's going against guys like Sean Wade. He's going against Marcus Williamson, Seven Banks, guys who have already been doing this against the Ben Victors, the Austin Max, right? Like that's who their competition is. Yeah. Julian Fleming might not have had, again, I don't believe he ever even got to play against Derek Davis Jr. Playing in the state of Pennsylvania. So again, these are guys that they're highly touted, but again, if you've played against that competition, it translates over when you make the jump to Ohio State. So I wouldn't be too worried about Julian Fleming. The kid's got burners. He's going to be electric. His hands are nothing to worry about. And his big play, capabilities is, arguably a lot higher of a ceiling than Jaxon Smith-Njigba, but Jaxon Smith-Njigba is just a ready to go guy right now. And that's the biggest separation between the two. Obviously we saw G Scott Jr. just lose his stripe as well. Again, comes from a prep academy that's highly touted in Washington. He probably received a little bit more coaching in regards to that, which has allowed him to excel a little bit more ahead of Fleming. That's probably the biggest thing there. Again, I fully expect Fleming to be one of the next two guys, if not the next. So, yeah, I wouldn't be too worried about that one. We'll see him soon.
What about some of the defensive guys like Ransom, Cavacious, and Court Williams? I know Court Williams just lost his black stripe. What are those those three freshmen, what are you hearing about? Do you think they'll see a lot of playing time?
Yeah, Court was shocking for me, to be honest with you. I figured, not to say anything against that, I just didn't figure that even that first four or five, I would not have expected. Legend Cavazos, I highly expect to be among those next one or two. I wouldn't be surprised if we see, you know, Fleming, Cavazos, or vice versa. Cavazos is somebody who is highly touted out of IMG, obviously a true blue chip. Again, with, you know, Sean Wade possibly leaving at the time, you know, Cavazos was a guy that they were talking about. You're going to have Marcus Williamson and Seven Banks jumping in. So, yeah, with those two guys obviously jumping in at the time, we would have probably seen Cavazos getting a little bit more time. That being said, obviously, Cavazos is somebody who I wouldn't be surprised even in the first few weeks to get a role in the secondary.
Yeah, I mean, this secondary, they definitely – if Cavazos can step up, that's going to be huge for the secondary. Even if he could come in late in the season, kind of play like what Von Bill did his freshman year, maybe, you know, step up during the bowl games. We need something like that, I think, this year, just because our secondary is going to be fine because we have Coach Combs, Sean Wade's back, but it needs some depth. It definitely needs some young guys to step in and actually make some plays this year. I think he – I completely agree with what you're saying. I think Cavazos could be and should be that guy.
Yep. And again, he's very Sean Wade like. It's funny, the two Florida natives, right? So again, like I think the ceiling for Cavazos is even higher though than Wade.
Really?
And that's a very bold statement, obviously. But if you watch the comparison at what they've done at the high school level, and then, you know, what you've heard from Coach Combs obviously has seen both the two at the high school level. He's had nothing but high praises, obviously, for Cavazos, and has even stated a couple times, like, he's got a lot of Sean Wade in him. So again, that's something that's very exciting for Buckeye Nation.
Yeah. Going back to Court Williams, I've been hearing a lot of comparisons that he's got the size of a Raekwon McMillan. Do you tend to agree?
Yeah. A little bit faster though. Raekwon was a quick LB, right?
Yeah.
But Court's, the biggest thing is his gap reading ability. Again, if you look on tape, his ability to, and his instincts to actually jump plays before they've even happened. That's the biggest thing. Raekwon's first step's a little bit slower. Sorry. You'll notice that even obviously now he's playing at the NFL level. He's obviously a little, updated from that, but, when you look at his actual high school tape, Court Williams is a much faster player, much more instinctual player. I'm really excited for Court Williams. Obviously we're going to have a big dumping of the LBs next year. Again, I wouldn't be surprised to see Court Williams starting as a sophomore.
And he's going to be Al Washington's what you call first big time Ohio State recruit.
Right. Absolutely. Can't argue with that one.
I saw today you tweeted something interesting about Baron Browning coming off the edge. What specifically are you hearing about some of the packages they're going to be using?
Yeah, so obviously the biggest thing in regards to Browning is, you know, if you're like me, it's hard watching Tuff Borland play up the play up in the gap schemes a lot. I think Combs has obviously realized the frustrations that come with having a little less speed in there. So he's going to use Browning in a few different packages, not just off the edge and pass rushing, but he's going to use him in a run-stopping situation against a lot of second and eight situations. Again, this is stuff when we go to play teams like Penn State and they got the Journey Browns, actually having that run stopping pressure is going to be huge when it gets down to it. Again, a guy like Tuff Borland can fill a gap and he can take on big guards. But at the end of the day, if you can jump the guards before they're there, you can get in the backfield. That's the biggest thing Ohio State's been missing since we've lost guys like Jerome Baker to the NFL. We've lost guys like Raekwon Millen. We've lost all those big names. Again, not to say anything against Pete Werner. Pete Werner is not going to be taking a lot of gaps. He's going to take a lot of stuff in coverage, and he's going to take a lot of stuff outside, right? Tuff Borland's been given the role of jumping a lot of that middle pressure, middle schemes. So now having the ability to actually use Browning the way he was meant to, the way he was used in high school, the reason he was a five-star and a blue chip, that's probably the biggest thing right now is actually watching and seeing how Browning is going to be getting used. Again, when just – music to my ears hearing that little tidbit today. Then obviously I wanted to drop it, share with Buckeye Nation. That was really exciting for all of us. And it's going to be exciting to see what Combs and Madison can do with them this year.
Absolutely. That line, this we were talking about the other night when we were a guest on the Ohio versus Everyone podcast. And we were talking about for once this linebackers are the strength of this defense for the first time in probably since the national championship year.
Right. Absolutely. I was just saying, the biggest thing is this year is obviously the fact you've seen it. Once you've seen what a lot of teams are running, again, we know what James Franklin's offense is about. We know that Jim Harbaugh is going to be very predictable. He's not going to have too much changing. Obviously, you're going to have Joe Milton in that offense. I don't expect them to run a lot of read option, much like Ohio State runs, but I do expect a lot of QB sneaks. Being able to break that point of attack with having Browning and packages like that, we really are loaded at the linebacker core.
Chugs, I don't know if you've heard, but apparently Joe Milton is Cam Newton, Tim Tebow, Vince Young, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Andrew Luck, John Elway, all in one. So yeah. I'm pretty concerned after seeing some tweets today.
Yeah, I'm pretty concerned too, especially because, you know, Shea Patterson was John Elway, he was Johnny Manziel, and he was, you know, you name it, he was everything that they were expecting coming out of Ole Miss. So, you know, this one really has me worried again, just as much as Shea Patterson did. So we'll see how that works out. Same thing tying in with when we heard the whole Denard Robinson, right? This is nothing new to Ohio State. This is nothing Ohio State hasn't seen. And in fact, I'm probably more confident in what we have on the field right now to stop even, let's say, if it was a more Cam Newton-esque type quarterback.
By the way, Jim Harbaugh's best quarterback was Jake Rudock, so I'm just going to say there.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll leave it at that then.
Yeah.
I mean, Shea Patterson went 5-7 at Ole Miss, and all of a sudden he was supposed to be the savior of Michigan. So
yeah. And we saw how that went.
Yeah.
So, Chugs, as we're kind of, you know, we have a couple more questions left, but as we're kind of wrapping up here.
Yeah.
Looking to, I guess, this year's recruiting, I guess not this year's, but next year. So in 2 years, who are some guys in high school right now that are like juniors that we should be keeping eyes on?
Biggest one right now, obviously, I don't know how dialed in you guys are. We got the 2022 today, Keonta Goodwin, offensive tackle, 6'7", 300. Big four-star tackle out of Charlestown, Indiana. Korelick put in his crystal ball cast today for him. Wilt Fong was kind of hinting, I think, last week that Goodwin could be a big Ohio State lean. I may have dropped a little something last week, it could have been on Twitter, hinting at a possible big boom. This may have been what I was hinting at in regards to that. As well, obviously, we got the five-star blue chip out of Grosse Pointe, Michigan, Will Johnson. Drawn a lot of comparisons to Denzel Ward. I really like Will Johnson.
Okay.
He released his top 10 the other day. Ohio State was obviously one of the first names he threw out there. He's talked a lot about liking Ohio State. This is probably my biggest grab for the 2022 class. I fully expect Day, Combs, obviously Pantone to go all in on Johnson. I think it's safe enough to say right now this one is really, again, things happen. This one is really Ohio State's to lose. Obviously, Michigan always likes to say they're going to play a role in their own in-state players. I really don't think with, obviously, what Michigan has produced in the last 5 to 10 years at the cornerback position, I just don't see how they can even – put up a fight in this battle. I really think this one's going to come down to you're going to be seeing Ohio State, you're going to see the Clemsons, you may see Alabama come out of somewhere. At the end of the day, the kid is big on Ohio State. His family's big on Ohio State. So, again, that's actually my biggest 2022 target right now. Again, you're looking at also Keon Saab, 2022 athlete, 6'3", 195, out in New Jersey. Really like him. High blue-chip player, 5-star. I think the Buckeyes are in a good position to land him. Looking a little bit further, again, 2023 class now, a little bit, diving in a little bit more.
My sophomores.
Exactly. I think he's going to slowly rise. We've heard a lot about him. I got the chance to watch him a week or two ago. Sonny Styles out of Pick Central, the 6'4 athlete and safety is just mind-blowing. I don't know who I necessarily got a comparison to for him. Maybe check back in with me in a month's time once I've watched a couple more, but he is electric, and that is the only thing I can say about him. The speed and the vision is just incredible.
Yeah, his brother's committed to Notre Dame, Lorenzo Styles. And I've seen him play because I'm from Fairfield County, and speaking of which, if you guys want to listen to, I don't have the call, but my the company I work for, Fairfield County Sports Network, has the Lancaster Pickerington Central game tomorrow night. So give that a listen as well. And just going back to 2022 class, Gabe Powers. I mean, 6'4", 235, linebacker out of Marysville. The dude's a freaking hoss. He's a beast. He's going to be fun to watch. Which we know where he's going. I mean, there's no way anybody's grabbing him out of Ohio.
Well, I've obviously been very vocal about Gabe Powers. Talking to obviously guys we already have. I don't care about anything that we've seen in the class. If there was one guy, this isn't me being kind of having that Marysville background or anything, but my big guy in the class for Ohio State was Gabe Powers. I totally agree with you. I think he's got the most upside of any player in this 2022 class for Ohio State. Again, you're going to be looking at Will Johnson as the biggest one to bring in, but the biggest guy to keep on board, obviously, is going to be Gabe Powers. I don't think that's going to be any issue. His family's Buckeyes. Everybody he knows is Ohio State. So, again, that one is exciting for us to watch. He is an absolute freak. Again, not a lot of comparisons. He's a 6'4" linebacker who's also playing running back for Marysville. So take that what you will of it. I think he's already got like 2 or 3 TDs on the season that are over 20-plus rush yards. So, again, that's pretty amazing for a 6'4" back, right?
I'm a fan of Desaun McCullough just because, I mean, he's an athlete, 4-star out of Kansas, and he just has that frame, like a 6'5", 220 pounds. If you get him the proper coaching, get him in the weight room with Coach Mick, that's going to be a bona fide beast right there.
Well, here's an interesting one I've heard. Obviously, Dastin with his background of his father, obviously being a running backs coach. We've seen what he can do with the ball in his hand, obviously, in high school. And you see what he can do, obviously, defensively. That's what he's being recruited for. But he's drawing some weird comparisons, almost back to the Chris Gamble age.
Oh.
You could see Day and staff using him in a similar way to Chris Gamble. These are things that, you don't see a lot of times in the current modern-day college football. Again, stuff like Desmond Howard, right? Like these are guys who had those capabilities to play both sides of the ball. McCullough is exciting for that, right? He's got the background to be able to adapt and play both, much like Cam Martinez right now, right?
Yeah.
Martinez is another kid I fully expect. Again, Northwestern made a late surge on Cam Martinez again, saying they're going to build him an offensive package. One of the things that kind of factored into that one too, just to solidify it, was Coach Combs, obviously, but saying that we may be able to work Cam Martinez into some packages on offense. These are things Day and his staff are very open to land big blue chips like this. So again, McCullough is somebody I could see them using like Chris Campbell on that.
I'd be cool seeing like a running back, like corner mix or something. That would be something, you know, really unique. I think, I mean, that's basically Jabril Peppers.
Exactly. And those are the comparisons that you're kind of looking at. You obviously hear the Isaiah Simmons one, but you know, the Chris Campbell comparison I heard, I really liked, and it was actually somebody coming from Ohio State staff that, you know, they hinted at that, which was really cool to hear.
So real quick before Dan gets into his plug questions, what do you think the advantages and disadvantages of the non-campus visit during this pandemic for the Buckeyes?
Well, biggest one obviously is you look at big guys like JTT, right? I believe if he had a chance to be on Ohio State's campus, he'd be as good as done already. You know, he's somebody who said he's going to follow the full process. Oftentimes, players like that who are highly touted, once they fall in love, that they're not too worried about the process. You see guys like Corey Foreman who maybe they commit early. The advantage of obviously having those recruiting visits, they can go back out and visit schools like LSU. They can decommit from Clemson and go have that advantage, obviously. So you're seeing stuff like that. A big disadvantage, obviously. It's hard, you know, when you get guys from the South who really do want to come up and see Ohio State. Maybe we can't make that work as much unless they got their own time to do so, right? You know, maybe one more visit even gets Tanise back thinking, hey, why'd I really focus on the cloud opposed to, you know, trying to really develop what I have? So these are some of the things that obviously are going to play into those decisions.
Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm biased because I graduated from Ohio State, but I went on the college tour just for like to see all the colleges back in the day. Not because I was a good athlete, I'm pretty terrible, but I went on the college tour, and it's just like when you step foot on Ohio State, it's just like it doesn't compare. Even to like Alabama, I've seen Alabama. I've been to down in Miami, the U. I honestly thought the U was going to be the greatest campus ever, and it was terrible. It was old, rundown, rainy. You step on foot in Columbus though, and that's a real college campus. You feel it, you know. It's beautiful. It's in a city. It's huge. It just feels right.
The only campus. I wasn't a big time college student. I went to a tech school, and but I've been around Ohio State since I was 3 years old, and I stepped foot on that campus for the first time when I was five. And that's when they had the track around the horseshoe, and I ran around the track and asked some random guy if he was Joey Galloway. Let me tell you that. But there is no other campus that compares to me. And personally, I've been to five different. Notre Dame is the only one that compares, just because it's a little bit cleaner and it's so much prestige. But outside of Notre Dame, I've been to that team up north. I've been to Purdue. I mean, of course, I've been to a bunch of MAC schools. There's still nowhere compares to Columbus. When you walk around campus, the Oval, heck, I got my engagement pictures before I got married at the Oval in the horseshoe. So if that tells you anything.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you really walk on campus, and I just don't – I've never been anywhere that I feel more wowed. You'll hear that often said by many recruits when they come on campus. Obviously touching on CJ Stroud, guys like that, they're blown away when they actually show up the campus. They see what's there. Travion Henderson didn't even take a visit, but it was enough to hear the same things that J.K. Dobbins heard. You're really taken back by it. And the biggest thing is there's Buckeye Nation everywhere you go in the state of Ohio. There is no other state like the state of Ohio. Ohio bleeds the scarlet and gray. You go down to Florida right now, they're literally arguing if UCF, sorry, is a better program than Florida. Like, how is your big state school in an argument with Central Florida. These are things. There's no argument with Ohio State and the Ohio Bobcats. There's no argument with Toledo, right? That this is the state team, and even more so than our NFL team.
Yeah, trust me, I know. Behind me, but and that's the thing. It's crazy because, you know, some of these recruits obviously don't step foot on campus. And I forget who it was, but what wowed him was the fact that that we got 99,000 to a glorified practice, and that sold a recruit to come to Ohio State. Yeah. I'll have to think of that name, and that was the year after the national championship or the year before, one of the two. But it was a recruit he got sold because he showed up to the spring game and there was 99,000 people at the spring game.
And that is true Ohio State football right there. It's unfortunate, obviously, you know, the recruits we're looking at right now, guys who are obviously – they got Ohio State in their top three or top two. COVID's unfortunately put a damper on that. And, you know, you're looking at some guys maybe start to think about who's playing. And again, this whole fiasco with the Big Ten, like it really did matter more for months to the SEC. And this is stuff that maybe, again, those when we're talking about those advantages and disadvantages, that was a huge disadvantage to Ohio State. That was a huge disadvantage to Big Ten teams. Not that Michigan and Penn State are going to be recruiting at the level Ohio State is, but to say that, you know, they may lose out on a guy that doesn't obviously wants to take a look at a school like Michigan or Penn State because he's not getting the Ohio State's offer, maybe Minnesota, but he's seeing that the SEC cares more. Now he's looking at a school like Ole Miss or a school like Tennessee over maybe going to Penn State. This is all stuff that obviously plays a factor in that.
So yeah, absolutely. And as we kind of wrap up here, Chugs, what have you kind of learned from your experience of just breaking this stuff on Twitter recently? Because obviously you've blown up. It's not even a question. You've blown up. Barstools recognize you. You've been gotten shout outs on Part of My Take. Big Cats tweeted at you a couple times. Like, what have you learned through this whole crazy experience?
Yeah. It's a good question. I think the biggest thing is obviously people want to hear what's breaking. People don't want the hidden messages. Again, I've obviously had the luxury of getting a lot of the inside scoops in certain stories, but I release that more just for people to get the knowledge. Again, it's fun. It's fun. Again, I like to play the personality with the Big Cat and the Barstool cast. So when they come calling, you know, I definitely like piping back and everything like that. Again, I'm not so much on the Siri outside where I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to report everything that maybe is suspect or, you know, maybe not coming through. I'm trying to give you guys all the right information. So I really do my research before I'm dropping it. It's not so much, again, I've been going back and forth with Suryat, and again, he knows he drops stuff that maybe wasn't always true, but again, it had good merit to it, and you know, some of it might have been true, but mine was more just, you know, everything that I had was obviously researched and backed, and again, it was a lot of fun for sure, seeing it. Seeing it blow up, like you said. And then again, we're going to see where this one keeps going. So just riding the wave.
Do you have any plans? Are you going to commit to like potentially for like writing for like an OSU website or anything like that? Or
yeah, see, yeah.
See yourself doing
you know what?
Like that down the road?
I've been reached out by a couple insiders. Won't drop those yet. There may be a little bit more news coming in the next, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks, let's say. But yeah, I've definitely been talking to a few insiders, stuff like that, trying to possibly get into something a little bit bigger. Maybe something will be released shortly. Next big thing is obviously to get the Chugs podcast dropping and maybe get you guys out on it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That would be awesome to be on.
We love
doing this show. We love going on people's show. We just love talking the Buckeyes, to be honest.
Oh, I agree.
Nothing gives me more joy outside of my family than Ohio State sports. So
yeah,
that's why I love doing this show.
Chugs, final question. What is your prediction on Ohio State's season this year?
If you are a educated Ohio State Buckeyes fan, if your answer is anything different than 8-0 for the regular season, 9-0 for the full season, and 10-0, or I guess 11-0 at the end of it, then you're out to lunch if it's not that, because that is absolutely what's built into this team. This is, on paper, the best Ohio State team I've seen in my existence, and arguably the best team we've seen. This is the most talented offense we're going to see. Biggest, obviously, tying into that is going to be if Sermon and Teague obviously can make the game very north-south. I'm not too worried about the passing game. And then defensively, as long as our secondary is just above mediocre, we're good to go. So this is a national championship year, and we should expect nothing less.
If we don't go to the playoff, I will chug a beer with you.
We'll get back on the pod and we'll do it.
I love it. Chug, just plug your Twitter so the listeners can follow you on your Twitter.
Yeah, @ChugsIV.
There you have it. So once again, everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Bunch of Nuts podcast. Chugs, thanks for coming on. And as always, go Bucks.
Go Bucks.
Go Bucks.